Okay, hello, and welcome to this latest episode of Innovations in Education, eCampus News' podcast on the latest and greatest happenings in higher ed tech this month. I'm Kevin Hogan, and I'm glad you found us. This month, I had the opportunity to chat with Silicon Valley veteran and serial entrepreneur Eric Pulier, founder and CEO of a virtual spaces company called Vatom, where we dive into the realm of augmented reality and virtual reality and how these transformative technologies have the potential to revolutionize higher education. Yep, you've heard that before. The promise and promises have been there for a long time. For many years, the best that could be said of AR/VR was that it was hot air, and at its worst, no better than snake oil. But just as with many other technologies over the pandemic years, the application of AR and VR have begun to turn into actual reality. From virtualization exercises to always-on, any device access to content. Eric's work and insights bring an insider's look into that transformation. Have a listen. Okay, Eric, thanks very much for joining me today. Really appreciate your time.
Great to be here.
I guess we should get started by just give us a little background, a little bit of your origin story and how you got involved in these various platforms. And we'll dig into what those platforms are in a second. Just give us a little bit of the background.
Sure. Well, in a nutshell, my origin story, as you put it, I guess goes back all the way to Teaneck, New Jersey, where I grew up. And at 10 years old, my father brought home one of the first computers small enough to fit in the home, called the Sol 20 by Processor Technology. And I started jumping in. 16, started my first company. And ironically, 16 companies later, now building out these platforms. The way that this came about was really a natural evolution of my work that started when the internet became the web, or I guess the web became an overlay on the internet, which was really in the 90s. And I went around evangelizing the power of the web for business, for every sector, healthcare, government, education. And as people started to adopt it, they eventually stopped asking, why do I want to use the web? Why do I want a website? And they said, how can I use it and how do I make it better? And then my evolution to today has been an evolution of leveraging these technologies to create superior engagement, better data, more interesting social connections between people. And this has been a natural progression until now. Now it's been a step change that is dramatically different, almost, I would say, as profound as the shift from internet to web to now the web 2 to web 3, and its applications to education are profound.
Yeah. And it's interesting you mentioned that because, you know, we're talking about higher ed here. They were kind of the original platform, right? When you look at ARPANET and you look at those sort of networks were intertwined even earlier in the 70s, I guess, between the military and then higher education when it came to R&D.
Right.
At the same time, as we've watched kind of these commercial platforms and platforms in other industries kind of overtake higher ed maybe in some ways in terms of the use of these technologies, to where when you look at the day-to-day operations and the use of communications on networks in higher ed, they're kind of backwards versus what's to overtake it. Talk a little bit about some of the distinctions that you see as higher ed as a potential platform for the use of your technologies.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think you're right that at first, huge amounts of innovation flowing into education and the use of digital tools, notably internet networks related. What happened is that this industrial model of education was made more efficient and better. However, it is still the same model. And that model ultimately taps out when you note that at the end of the model is still a human that has to be imparted information, has to retain information, has to want to engage without getting bored, be motivated to find a social connection that unites people into joint activities. There's all sorts of factors that go into what makes somebody want to learn and ultimately advance. And what we find is that the plateau occurred. And while there was advancement, it wasn't exponential anymore. People were like, okay, we're using these tools. Now let's make another lesson. Let's put another YouTube video up. Let's make another learning management system and make it more efficient. But the leaps were not there. I think what's happening now is truly a leap. We're recognizing that there are different ways to learn that are dramatically more effective when we can personalize that learning, when we can introduce social factors into the learning process. And when we can put gamification techniques that weren't possible with the other technologies to be as immersive, as engrossing, and as memorable. So as we combine these technologies now, we're taking a leap in the capabilities of the use of internet for engagement and applying it to not only to education as we knew it, but to a new model of what it means to educate and what it means to teach.
Yeah. Well, let's break it down within higher ed itself. There are so many different kind of flavors of AR and VR that you can talk about. One of what intrigues me very much is the idea of simulation, you know, especially when you get into a lot of higher ed, when you're talking about the medical applications, other instances just involving remote teaching of industrial concepts and things like mm-hmm. that. Is that something you think that will drive it versus just kind of a general conceptual, hey, let's get together in the metaverse and have a conversation?
Yeah, I think you've hit it exactly on the head. Simulation is probably the area that's most frothy for innovation. Now, let's talk about simulation across a spectrum of what that could be applied to. So you have the simulation like what you described in medical. So that might be, well, let's simulate an operation. Let's simulate a real world scenario where you have to do certain things in order precisely the right way. And that experience, doing it in this safe environment, then translates into real world activities. It's a kind of training methodology. You have the same type of capability with AR as well as VR, whether you're immersed or whether you're overlaying information into a real world environment where you can train. There's also real time information that then is not just about training or education, but it's about assisting during the actual act of applying care, an operation, or fixing an industrial piece of equipment where the AR overlays on that and tells you, turn this knob left, click this switch next, do these things, and it's showing you that in real time overlaid on the physical environment. Those are types of training and where simulation comes into play. But the other area that I think is less well understood but equally important is simulation on EQ type environments, where emotional interactions and human interactions can be simulated for dramatic effect. This goes for certain types of training, skills-based training for jobs, but also skills-based training for very specific tasks in real-world environments. Let me give you an example that I think is interesting. Recently had a conversation with the Economic Tourism Bureau of Dubai. It's one of the fastest growing tourism and economic phenomenons that we've ever seen. And as they grow with every aspect of their economy, they also have about 40% turnover on the service worker jobs that people have to be educated to take. There's a couple issues. One, people want to come into Dubai and they fake their credentials. The other thing is they come in with maybe a certain level of skill in one area, but they don't have the EQ or the ability to handle people that's necessary to do the job properly. And then, of course, there's the turnover after all of that training and getting them to another level. How do you get somebody else up to speed fast enough when you can't even get enough people in the slots in the first place? Now, with the new technologies that we're seeing coming together, we have a different layer on the internet. We're really integrating our digital and physical lives more fully. Our physical lives are made up of people, places, and things. Everywhere you look can be described as one of those things in the environment as you look around right now. But in our digital lives prior, certainly as we apply it to training or other aspects of using the internet, it's basically an information topology. It's information you can ask for, it's you can search for, you can watch something, you can read something, but it's very different than the real world. We separate it in our mind, and therefore less memorable, less engaging, more easily bored, and more easily faked. So as you get into this new world where you can create kind of metaverse-like environments, where you have an identity, you have an avatar, where you have spatial awareness, where you have social interactions with people, where you have AI-driven, what are called non-player characters that can then interact with you at different types of scenarios, badging, NFTs that can become digital objects that can then give you badges of achievement that can't be counterfeit, that you know that this person actually achieved this skill. As these things come together, now imagine I'm coming in and I'm being trained to run a reservation system for Marriott with cranky people online, with something that's broken at the same time in a different language, with two people hitting, you know, asking me for something over here. And how am I going to handle all of this at once and know how to use this actual console? And how do I prove that I've done that? All of these things are going to be done in a fraction of the time with much greater efficiency and with incentive systems where I can now use that capability to train other people and get credit for that. So that addresses the turnover problem as well.
Let's talk a little bit about kind of the physical logistics of this, and specifically in a higher ed space. Now, we've both kind of dated ourselves by talking about the early internet, and we've seen a lot of the technologies predating the metaverse and the use of goggles. I've been skeptical of the goggles for a long time. They're still uncomfortable for me. I can't put them over my own set of specs here. At the same time, I've seen examples, especially in a higher ed space, of more of a laboratory setup where you're going into a room and you're immersed maybe with flat screens that surround you and create another sort of sense of the metaverse. Where do you see the most effective way to actually experience your technologies? Is it going to be through a goggle, or is it going to be through a room, or a combination? Or spell that out for me.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately a combination, but I certainly don't think that the headsets and goggles are the primary. I share your skepticism on where we are in the trajectory of making that usable at scale. First of all, they're too heavy. At half the weight of what they are now, which is already half the weight of what they were just recently, they're still too heavy. They'll be at half the weight of that, still too heavy. Clunky, separates you from your environment. Can only, you know, certain people get dizzy. There's all sorts of things that will lead to the inevitable conclusion that we're not close right now to that being ubiquitous. We are close, however, to other forms of hardware being ubiquitous, but notably the phone and laptops. So if you think about this as an evolution of existing technology to be more engrossing, to have more memorable interactions, both spatially and socially, have a sense of ownership layer on top of that, you can really think of it as an evolution of the web itself, which is why it's not bad to think of Web 2 going to Web 3.0 as a convergence of these technologies. So now imagine that every website has a come inside button. It's just a standard thing. You don't have to learn something. You don't have to put something on your head. You already know how to surf the web. But instead of it being boring and something that feels informational, it becomes a place. So you can say, hey, meet me over in the science lab, or meet me at cars.com. Let's go learn about carburetors. Now you go inside and you hear someone out of your left ear. How do you do that? You click a button and it's a 2D website, but it's a 3D projection of a space that gives you a sense of place because you can move. Right now, we're stuck in a zoo. We are in a kind of a fight or flight biological pattern where in this Zoom, I'm looking at you and I'm intellectually saying, you're probably not going to try to hurt me. Hope you won't.
Yeah.
I'm going to make that assumption. But on that assumption, I'm flowing very naturally intellectually, but physically my brain is saying, well, you know, this is going to give me anxiety. It says it's a known phenomenon called Zoom fatigue. You can only hang out here a certain time before you feel like, oh my God, I got to stop. COVID really wiped it out as a species almost. So and it wasn't just because of COVID, it's just a Zoom. So what we need to do here is we need to recognize that when you free ourselves from the tyranny of the box of Zoom and you have agency, you don't need a headset. You can just now move around and now I'll hear you over here and I'll hear someone else over there and I'll say, hey, look, let's go check this out. I want to learn about Newton's apple under a tree. Let's go there. Let's watch the apple fall. Let's pick it up. Now I have it in my wallet. Now let's go somewhere else. So the fact of moving from place to place is like your eyes blinking. It recharges you, gives you a sense of spatial awareness and memory that can't be associated with a normal stream of information that just becomes from the future into the past and you have no way of marking it psychologically. This gives you a different way to connect to information and to translate it into memories. And so in this context, what we're going to see is a evolution of the web where the space itself psychologically is no less real than this physical space, which means that independent of our existence, it exists. So we can come in a phone, we can come in a laptop, we can come in an Oculus headset, if that's what you want to do. Or we can be in the car and I can say, hey, I want to join this. And then I just say, I'm joining, but I'm just listening. I don't have to navigate. I don't have to worry about anything visual. but maybe someone who's there visual will see my avatar, know that I'm there and have a presence. So it's really that we're going to start to look at learning environments, and the devices will tend to trend to the cheapest, most prevalent, and easiest to use.
So it's almost agnostic. I mean, you can access the content despite whatever device that you're using. So I mean, if you have the luxury and the aptitude for it, and Oculus have at it, but you don't need it, you're saying. I mean, you can bring it down. And that addresses another question I had for you about the issues of equity and equal access, especially when it comes to higher education. There's still a lot of different levels of digital equity that needs to be addressed when it comes to the use of technology for education. That sounds like a solution.
I really believe it is a solution. It's a path towards a solution, put it that way. It's an optimistic view, but I think it's the right one. If you look at where we're heading now, we have the ability to have a clear sight on low-cost ubiquitous networks that will cover the earth. We really can see where that's coming. We have a clear sight to low-cost devices that everyone can have and can reach that network. There are many areas of the world where that's not completed yet. Let's not overstate, but there's so many initiatives that are going into place where the majority of the populations are going to be able to access these networks. Now, the question is, now what kind of content will that be enabled? There's initiatives like the Other 50, which which kind of came out of discussions at the XPRIZE Foundation that Intel has backed and others that are setting up edge networks at telco stations in developing countries that are giving free minutes and free content to educational content. So now you have the devices proliferating, you have the networks available where they need to be, and then you have the free ability to access this content and the free content itself being open sourced and made available. So this is going to create a tidal wave of open access. And now there's AI algorithms and really unbelievable advances in how you learn to get personalized learning. So it's just like yet another video of the same thing to the same person. You might get individualized teaching for your own level and needs. So all of that, I believe, is coming together, and you might call that top down. And that what that's going to leave everyone with is not only the ability to access that, but the ability to produce it. So now that you're accessing that, you're getting educated, you're getting trained. Now, how do you actually express that training and education or creativity to get paid? That's the next thing, where we're also going to give far more democratized access to people to democratize their creativity and their labor, and to be able to deliver actual forms of payment in the form of stable coins and other ways that we can move money to wallets at a mass scale.
Yeah. How important is the behavior of the user in all of this? I know one of the big challenges is you have to explain the metaverse to me, and we have to explain the metaverse to everyone of a certain age and in our generation. I look at the younger generations who have been raised in Minecraft and in Roblox. They don't really need to have the metaverse explained to them, right?
That's right. The metaverse as defined by people who made Fortnite and made Roblox and wanted to make Meta, etc., it has to be explained to people who are not inherently gamers, because it's a gamified or underlying gaming system, and it feels like a game, and the controls are game-like, and people who aren't steeped in that either have to be explained, you know, why that would be interesting to them, and then trained to use it. But you don't have to train anybody to go and get a cup of coffee. Like, if you go to anyone at almost any age, whether they like coffee or not, you don't have to explain what does that mean. It kind of means I want to sit with you, I want to have a chat, and I want to talk about something that hopefully will benefit all of us. There's shorthand to do that. We can get to that. There's a new definition, or I guess a better definition, I'd say, of metaverse that is that simple, because everyone knows what a website is, and everyone knows how to use it, and everyone can therefore be taught, if that's the right word, to go to a better website. We started with flat pages that didn't do anything, that were not database-driven. They were just markup language of some text and pictures. And we went to database-driven pages that were dynamic and can be more interesting based on what you're asking for. Then we went to e-commerce and social. What we called social was more like anti-social, but information that people host, you know, user-generated content. So we advanced to a better website, and no one didn't want a better website. It wasn't that hard to understand. Well, guess what? Here we are again. The new definition, the better definition of metaverse is a better website. Why is it better? It's better because it's more memorable. It's more social. There's an ownership layer that's going to allow us to engage more fully. And people are not going to have a hard time understanding it because you're not going to have to explain it. They're actually going to feel like the website's boring if it doesn't have these attributes.
Yeah. So what are your suggestions to our listeners, you know, leaders at higher ed institutions who are, you know, in charge of the technology? They're approached with all these various new platforms and experiences and acronyms. They have a student body who is already savvy with the use of these technologies. As they're putting together their strategies for the next, say, 3 to 5 years, what are some of the first steps that they should consider?
The most important thing is to start. This is nothing that you can learn by evaluation on PowerPoint, by putting vendors against one another, by taking a class. You can do all those things, but the real way that you're going to become proficient and therefore relevant, I believe, to the next generation of learning and of these technologies is to do it. And you don't have to do it well. And it doesn't cost you anything. It's to basically start. You can go to vadum.com, for instance, and make your own metaverse in 5 seconds. And then you can invite people to it. What is it? It's a URL. Again, it's a better website. And talk to one another. Then you can say, hey, look, wouldn't it be interesting in this context? We already know how to use Zoom. What if Zoom was a little better? What if the web was a little better? What if we had agency and we can start to create experiences instead of streams of information that are really quickly to become boring? What if we were to create something that had more bite-sized chunks, that had gamification techniques into it? All of this information is available. All the technology is available. Nothing is future state. And it's all ready to go now. And there are examples that you can try yourself, such as what Genius is doing, right? And Stanford and others that we admire and participate in collaborations. So what I would recommend above all else is to put your toe in the water, set expectations only to the notion of playing with it and learning yourself. And what you're going to find very quickly is that you can't help but innovate, right? Once you're getting in there, you'll be like, oh, well, I wonder if we could do this and can we do that? And the answer is going to be yes.
Yeah. Well, Eric, I knew the most difficult part of our conversation would be ending it. There's so many different aspects and rabbit holes we can go down, but you know, the insights that you've shared with us already today are more than enough for keeping my brain full. So I appreciate your time and your efforts and good luck going forward.
Thank you so much. I love being here and I appreciate your time today as well.
And that's all there is for this month's episode of eCampus News' Innovations in Education. Be sure to subscribe for more episodes on your favorite podcast platform and go to ecampusnews.com for plenty of more content.